Froggy the Gator, Mr. Hummus, and Wormbird were in the middle of an important activity. You see, over the years, Froggy the Gator had amassed quite the collection of Legos. He had all types of Legos, big and small Legos, every piece you can think of. He had different collections of all sorts of Legos. And today, the boys were using those Legos to build something the likes of which the world had never seen before. What were they building? Why, they were building a rocket ship. They were building a rocket ship out of Legos, loaded with enough supplies to build an entire space station in outer space. They'd been at it for hours, and their design was finally nearing completion. "Houston," Froggy the Gator said into his pretend walkie-talkie, "we are ready for liftoff. Operation Lego Space Station is a go. T-minus 10 seconds to ignition." Wormbird responded from the pretend control tower. "Everything clear from this end, team," he said. "We are a go for launch at your command." And after a few seconds of anticipation, their Lego rocket ship space station took off. It must have been made of 1,000 Lego pieces. The boys had spent all afternoon creating and crafting the design, and now, in their minds, it was on its way to outer space to complete its purpose of building a space station where astronauts could live. But then, also in their minds, something went wrong. As they imagined the rocket ship igniting and taking off into outer space, something horrible happened. The rocket ship was about 30 feet in the air when it got stuck in the big oak tree in Froggy's backyard. "How could we have missed so badly on our calculations?" Froggy said in frustration. "Our hard work is now in jeopardy." The boys looked up at the mighty oak tree. They saw their rocket ship there tangled in the branches, and they imagined the rocket thrusters futilely trying to ignite and push the rocket out to no avail. All of their building supplies for their beautiful space station were now stuck in the tree as well. This was truly a difficult situation. "What are we gonna do, guys?" Mr. Hummus said. "We have to figure out a way to get our rocket ship unstuck so it can get to outer space." And after a few seconds, just when everything seemed hopeless, Froggy the Gator had an idea. "Wait a minute, guys, I got it." And then, without saying another word, Froggy the Gator started building. First, he grabbed every red Lego he could find. Then, he grabbed every wheel Lego he could find. He grabbed every chrome Lego, and he quickly dashed around the sprawling pile of Legos scattered about the backyard like a virtuoso conductor collecting the pieces he needed. Mr. Hummus and Wormbird looked on in awe as Froggy continued to build. He went into a trance-like state, building as if the fate of the very world depended on his dexterity and his acuity. Then, after a few minutes of frenzied building, Froggy the Gator stepped back. "Voila," he said, and Mr. Hummus and Wormbird could not believe what they saw. There, sitting right before them, expertly constructed by Froggy the Gator in a matter of seconds, stood a magnificent, gleaming, fully functioning, candy apple red fire truck. It was a marvel of engineering. Its vibrant scarlet bricks snapped together with the utmost care and complete with chrome plastic axles, flashing lights on top, and a real-life working water hose spooled up in its flank. It even had a functioning extending ladder, ready to extend high up into the oak tree and rescue the boys' space station rocket ship. "Amazing," Mr. Hummus said as he admired the fire truck. "This is just like the real thing. In fact, it's better than the real thing. This is the best fire truck I've ever seen. Thanks, Mr. Hummus, Froggy the Gator said. And it's also just what we need to retrieve our rocket ship from the giant oak tree that nearly swallowed it whole. Come on, guys. It's time to be firemen. And with that, the boys put on their imaginary fire hats and slid down their imaginary fire pole, courtesy of the jungle gym in Froggy's backyard that Daddy the Gator had built several years before, and then they ran toward the engine. Once they got inside the fire truck, Froggy started driving. He turned on the lights and the siren, and Mr. Hummus and Wormbird held on to the side of the fire truck, and they drove through imaginary streets, weaving through imaginary traffic, and after a few minutes of daring fire truck maneuvers, they'd reached the base of the towering oak tree. "Come on, fellas, we gotta act fast," Froggy the Gator said. So they extended the extending ladder and ramped it up toward the rocket ship at the top of the tree. "It's gonna take all three of us to get this thing loose," Froggy said. "Wormbird, you use your dragonfly wings to fly alongside me and Mr. Hummus while we climb the ladder. Then, when we all reach the space station rocket ship, we'll dislodge it and we'll carry it back down." And that's exactly what they did. The boys expertly took one mighty step after the other up the Lego fire truck extending ladder until they'd reached the space station stuck in the oak tree. After a few minutes of careful wrangling, they managed to get it back down to the ground. "Outstanding," Mr. Hummus said, as they stared at their Lego space station rocket ship that they'd rescued with their Lego fire truck. "It's not even too worse for the wear," said Wormbird. "I think we could still get this thing into outer space before dinner." So the boys huddled together and did a second launch. This time, they moved far away from the oak tree. And after the countdown, the Lego rocket ship launched successfully into the atmosphere. All on board made it safely to orbit, where they could begin construction on their awesome space station and house their families for generations as our species explored the universe. "What a day, fellas," Froggy the Gator said. "Thank you for all of your hard work." And with that, the friends put back on their fireman hats, they got back into their Lego fire truck, and did the pretend drive home to Froggy's house, where Froggy's mother had made tacos, and they went inside to eat. Thank you all so much for listening to Froggy the Gator. This is Harrison. I am the creator of Froggy the Gator, and I just wanted to take a minute to extend my gratitude for you all being here, as well as ask a huge personal favor. If you enjoy Froggy the Gator and you want to help the show grow, make sure that you're following us on your podcast app of choice and make sure that you leave us a rating and a review. And if you're a kid listening to this, of course, make sure you get your parents' permission first. Thank you, everyone. We'll be back with more Froggy the Gator adventures soon. Froggy the Gator, Wormbird, Tomato Hedgehog, and Mr. Hummus walked slowly toward the entrance to the Gator Grove History Museum. This was one of their favorite places to visit, and today, Mommy the Gator had taken them to go and see a new exhibit about the Roman Empire called Exploring Ancient Rome. In case you didn't know, the Roman Empire existed about 2,000 years ago, and Froggy the Gator had just started learning about it at school. So what great timing that he and his friends got to go visit the museum right when the exhibit started with Mommy the Gator. As the boys walked through the front doors, they were immediately swept away by their imaginations. They were surrounded by all different types of history, from ancient Egypt, to dinosaurs, to Paleolithic hunter-gatherers, and then, straight ahead of them, they saw the entrance to the Roman Empire exhibit. And what was even more surprising is that the Roman Empire exhibit entrance was right beside their old friend, Grandfather Kronos. In case you forgot, Grandfather Kronos is an old grandfather clock that lives at the History Museum. And in the boys' imaginations, the grandfather clock sometimes comes to life and sends them on time-traveling adventures. "Look, guys," Mr. Hummus said, "Grandfather Kronos is right in front of the Roman Empire exhibit. I wonder if he's going to send us back in time today." And sure enough, as the boys walked up to Grandfather Kronos, in their vivid imaginations, he started to come to life. His face became a regular, actual face, his clock hands became actual hands and arms, and a big beam of light erupted out of him until suddenly he was standing there, an actual clock guy, looking down at the boys. "Welcome, my friends," Grandfather Kronos said. "I am guessing you are here for the Roman Empire exhibit. Well, that's lucky for all of us, because there is some trouble in ancient Rome, and I need you boys to help sort it all out. Can you do that for me?" "Of course," Froggy said, looking over at his friends and ready for another time-traveling adventure. "We'd do anything for our friend Grandfather Kronos. What can we do to help?" "Well," said Grandfather Kronos, "you see, there is a powerful crystal amulet that has long been lost to history. And whoever holds this amulet will hold the power to shape the destiny of Rome. The amulet has ended up in the wrong hands, those of the cunning Augustus Gershwin, and he's threatening to change history by dominating the great Roman Empire. But there's a catch. Augustus Gershwin has a passion for chariot races, and he's offered a challenge, a race for the amulet. If you win the race, the amulet is yours." "Wow," said Froggy, "an ancient amulet, you say? Augustus Gershwin, you say? What does it all mean? And what is an amulet anyway?" "Well," said Grandfather Kronos, "the amulet is a beautiful yellow diamond, and it's about as big as a lemon. And it's set against a silver locket and attached to a golden chain. And if you bring the amulet back, history will be safe. But if Gershwin keeps it, well, who knows what will happen? This museum might actually even cease to exist." "Amazing," said Froggy. "We're in." And almost immediately, Grandfather Kronos waved his hands and a whirl of light enveloped the group. When the brightness subsided, the boys found themselves in the heart of ancient Rome, dressed in Roman attire. And all of the sudden, Froggy had become Frogisius Maximus. And Wormbird was now Vermis Aves. Tomato Hedgehog had turned into Tomatus Spinosus. And Mr. Hummus, well, he was now dressed as Humicius the Great. The bustling streets of Rome seemed unfamiliar yet exciting. Chariots roared by, market vendors shouted their wares, and centurions patrolled the streets. And it didn't take long for news of the challenge to reach Frigisius and his friends. Augustus Gershwin had chosen the Grand Colosseum for the race, a venue that would be filled with roaring spectators. Now, if you've never seen a chariot race, just imagine this. Big wooden carts with two wheels pulled by really strong horses racing extra fast. It's like a car race, but with horses, and the riders, called charioteers, would stand on these carts and hold on to the reins tightly. Then they would zoom around a big track, trying to be the first to finish, all while the crowd cheered and clapped. It was one of the most thrilling events in ancient Rome. And now it was the boys' turn to participate. For the next few days, they trained fervently. Humicius, with his love for ancient mechanics, became the chariot expert, while Vermis Aves and Tomatus practiced their navigation skills. Frogisius, brave as ever, decided he would be the charioteer. And they designed a chariot that was both fast and maneuverable, a perfect fit for Frogisius's fearless driving. The day of the race came quickly. The Colosseum was packed, As they prepared, Augustus Gershwin, wearing a sly grin, approached the boys. "Are you ready to lose, Frigisius?" he taunted. But Frigisius just smiled and replied, "We're here for that amulet, Gershwin, so prepare to be defeated." The Colosseum was bustling with anticipation. Thousands of spectators had gathered, filling the stadium to watch the chariot race. The chariots were very different in design, with each team showcasing its colors and its symbols. In the midst of them all, Frigisius's chariot was unique, built with a sleek, sturdy frame and a bright fire emblem on the front. With the trumpet sound, the race began. Chariots jostled for position on the dirt track, causing a thick cloud of dust. The sound of hooves, wheels, and the distant shouts of spectators all echoed around the stadium. Frigisius and his team had a plan. Vermis Aves, perched at a good vantage point, directed Frigisius on the best path to take, avoiding the roughest patches and pointing out shortcuts. Tomata Spinosus was busy at the back, cleverly tossing out small obstacles like little tomatoes, causing rival chariots to swerve or slow down. And Humisius, with tools in hand, constantly checked the chariot, ensuring that no wheel was loose and all was functioning properly. The race was intense. As they approached the last bend, Augustus Gershwin's chariot edged closer, the wheels nearly touching Frigisius's chariot. He had a determined look, hoping to outpace Frigisius in the final stretch. However, with a sudden burst of speed, aided by their chariot's sleek design, Frigisius shot ahead, beating Gershwin by mere seconds. The Colosseum erupted with thunderous applause and cheers. The defeated Gershwin, looking both impressed and annoyed, handed over the coveted yellow diamond amulet and gold necklace chain. "This isn't over, Frigisius," he warned. But before Frigisius could reply, a swirl of light enveloped the boys, and moments later, they were back at the museum, standing in front of Grandfather Kronos. "You've done it again, boys," Grandfather Kronos said, as he slowly returned to being a regular clock and the museum returned to normal. "Rome's destiny remains unaltered, and history is safe. Thank you." And so, feeling proud and accomplished, the boys met back up with Mommy the Gator and enjoyed the rest of their day at the Gator Grove History Museum. Froggy the Gator, Mr. Hummus, Wormbird, and Tomato Hedgehog were on their way to do something really, really exciting. It was something they'd been looking forward to for weeks, and the day had finally arrived. What were they doing? Well, I'll give you some hints. First, you know Froggy and his friends really like cars, right? And second, you know they like things that go fast, right? Like things with engines and things that speed by. And finally, you know they like playing outside and being outdoors, right? Well, where can you put all three of those things together? Why, at a Formula One race, of course, and that is where the guys were headed today. "I can't wait, fellas," Froggy the Gator said in the back seat of Daddy the Gator's car as his friends eagerly looked out the window to see the racetrack coming into view. "We're gonna see all of our favorite drivers, and they're going to all be moving close to 200 miles per hour. This is going to be great." Soon they pulled into the parking lot of the arena. They saw rows and rows of cars, many of them decorated with colors and flags of their favorite cars, teams, and drivers. Froggy immediately zeroed in on a common blue and green flag, the flag of the Dragon Masters, his favorite team and his favorite driver, Mr. Fire Dragon himself. "Look, guys," Froggy the Gator said, "there are a bunch of other Dragon Master fans here." You see, the Dragon Master team was the coolest team in all of Formula One, at least as far as Froggy and his friends were concerned. They had the best team colors, blue and green. They had the best mascot, who was a fire-breathing dragon. And their driver, Mr. Fire Dragon, was on all of Froggy's favorite cereal boxes. And Froggy even had Mr. Fire Dragon action figures at home in places of prominence around his bedroom. "Let's go, Dragon Masters," Mr. Hummus said as they exited their car and walked toward the arena. But then, as they were walking, they also started seeing some red and yellow flags. "Oh boy," said Wormbird, "look at those red and yellow flags. Those people are here supporting the spiderwebs." And the spiderwebs, in case you didn't know, which you probably didn't, are the Dragon Master's biggest rivals. And their driver, Johnny Eight Legs, was known for pulling dangerous stunts on the track and doing whatever it takes to win. "I hope the Dragon Masters beat the spiderwebs today," Froggy said as they passed by the ticket booth. Once they got inside the arena, they saw all kinds of merchandise for sale. They saw Dragon Masters and Spiderwebs merchandise, which seemed to be the most popular. And then they saw snack stands where people could get warm, doughy pretzels or popcorn or cheesy nachos or whatever else they really wanted to eat. And then finally, the group found their seats and went down to enjoy the race. When they got to their seats, they realized they were right over the track. And they were right in time, too, because the race was about to begin. Froggy and his friends looked down below them and they saw pit lane, where teams were working on polishing, testing, making last-minute adjustments to the cars, and then they heard the announcer over the loudspeakers. "Welcome, everyone, to the Gator Grove Formula One Championship. Now to introduce the drivers." "Oh boy, this is it," said Froggy to his friends as the announcer introduced driver after driver. Finally, the announcer said, "And our final two drivers this evening, ranked numbers 1 and number 2 in the world respectively, representing the blue and green Dragon Masters, please welcome Mr. Fire Dragon." And the crowd roared as Mr. Fire Dragon walked to the stage before getting into his car. The announcer then continued, "And starting right beside Mr. Fire Dragon, from the red and yellow spiderweb team, please welcome Johnny Eight Legs." And this time, half the crowd cheered, while the other half kind of sighed or even booed, since Johnny Eight Legs had such a reputation for being a sneaky driver. The drivers were all in their cars, and then the lights counted down to begin the race, and finally, they were off. Immediately, the cars made it to close to 200 miles per hour, and they were zooming all over the track as fast as they could. "This is so great," said Froggy the Gator to his friends, as they cheered on the Dragon Masters and the driver, Mr. Fire Dragon. They sat back and enjoyed the show, with Mr. Fire Dragon and Johnny Eight Legs jumping out to a clear lead from the rest of the pack, and soon, the race was basically down to just the two of them. Johnny Eight Legs and Mr. Fire Dragon were neck and neck, speeding around turns and overtaking each other left and right. There were only a couple of laps left now, and it was still anybody's race. The red and yellow spiderweb fans were cheering, the green and blue Dragon Master fans were cheering, and the drivers really put on quite a show for the fans. But then, on the final lap, something happened. Johnny Eight Legs tried one of his patented sneaky moves. He was right behind Mr. Fire Dragon, and he tapped Mr. Fire Dragon's back right wheel with the front of his car. But Mr. Fire Dragon, being the pro that he was, didn't flinch. He kept on driving. Johnny Eight Legs couldn't stop him. But Johnny Eight Legs' plan backfired even worse than that, because he lost control of his red and yellow car and spun into a nearby wall. That was it, Froggy thought. The race is over. Mr. Fire Dragon is going to win. But then Mr. Fire Dragon did something that surprised everyone. He actually slowed down. See, Johnny Eight Legs had gotten into a pretty bad crash at the wall, so Mr. Fire Dragon slowed down to make sure that everything was okay. His biggest rival, and there was Mr. Fire Dragon, checking on him to make sure that he wasn't badly injured. As Mr. Fire Dragon slowed down, another car passed in front of him and took the checkered flag. That means won the race. But Mr. Fire Dragon didn't seem to care. He just wanted to make sure that nobody got hurt. "Dad," Froggy the Gator said, "I don't get it. Why did Mr. Fire Dragon let that other car pass him? The race was his to win, no question. What's going on?" Daddy the Gator looked a little bit surprised too, but then he smiled and patted Froggy on the back. They watched as the awards ceremony began, and Mr. Fire Dragon took second place, even though he could have easily won the entire event. But Mr. Fire Dragon was smiling. He looked happier than the guy who actually did win. And this seemed weird to Froggy too. So he asked his dad again, "Dad, what's going on? Why is Mr. Fire Dragon so happy? He didn't even win. He let the other guy pass him." Finally, Daddy the Gator spoke up. "Well, son, Mr. Fire Dragon is smiling because he knows he raced with integrity. He knows he did the right thing. He didn't want anyone to get injured, so he did what he had to do to check on Johnny Eight Legs. And what you see down there is the look of a guy who is happy with his decisions. Because at the end of the day, the way we feel about our actions is more important than any trophy. And if we do the right thing, and we know it deep down, then we'll always feel okay." Froggy the Gator peered through the glass pane window. He stared straight ahead, looking intently at what lay before him. His eyes couldn't believe what he saw. He could not stop looking. Ahead of Froggy lay what seemed like an endless expanse of wonder and amazement. Ahead of Froggy lay the mysteries, the marvels, the wildlife of the ocean. Froggy and Tomato Hedgehog were visiting the aquarium for the day. They'd gone to see the dolphin shows and the seals performances given by the marine animal trainers, and now they were staring at the big tank. The big tank stretched on for what seemed like forever, and inside they saw all different kinds of marine life. They saw wise, ancient sea turtles, they saw friendly dolphins, they saw manta rays blocking out the sun from above with their wings, they even saw a fabled whale shark nobly overseeing the tank as he swam from end to end. "This is so cool," Froggy said to Tomato Hedgehog, as the boys had their noses both pressed against the glass. "Can you imagine what it would be like if we could swim with these animals? If we could be in the ocean and be a part of all of that?" And just then, you guessed it, their imaginations began to take over. Suddenly, Froggy the Gator heard a thundering boom from above the big tank. All of the fish and whales and sea turtles scattered immediately, and as Froggy looked up toward the top of the tank, he saw a huge shadow over the top of the water. Then Froggy and Tomato Hedgehog looked around. They weren't at the aquarium anymore. In fact, they weren't even on land anymore. They were now, all of a sudden, deep under the sea. The ocean surrounded them as far as they could see in all directions. Then they looked down at their hands and they realized they were also now both wearing underwater mechanical submarine robot suits. Their suits came equipped with foot propulsion and oxygen distribution, which meant they could zoom around their new underwater environment with ease, like an underwater robot jet ski, and never run out of breath. "This is great," said Tomato Hedgehog, as the boys both used their underwater mechanical submarine robot suits to zip back and forth around the seafloor. "But," Tomato Hedgehog continued, "but where are all the sea animals?" "Oh no," said Froggy, "you're right." And as they surveyed the ocean seascape, it dawned on them. The animals were all gone. All they saw was a large shadow looming above them, above the surface, blocking out the sun's rays from shining down onto the sea floor. There was no one else around. The sea was empty. It was just sand, water, and these peculiar, strange, yellow and purple, glowing, barnacle-looking things scattered around the sea floor. But just then, just when Froggy and Tomato Hedgehog were starting to get worried, a lone sea turtle swam up to them, looking exasperated and desperate. "Oh, thank goodness," the sea turtle said. "My name is Terrence, the sea turtle, and you boys are just in time." "Just in time," Froggy said. "Just in time for what?" "Well," Terrence continued, "I'm sure you've noticed there's no marine life around here. Well, that's because of the shadow." Terrence pointed his turtle fin upward toward the shadow that was blocking the sun from reaching the seafloor. "Oh yeah, we saw that thing," Froggy said. "But what's so bad about the shadow? What is it?" "Well," said Terrence, "that shadow isn't actually a shadow. It's a submarine ship, and it belongs to the dreaded Gershwin Cousteau. Gershwin Cousteau has been driving his huge submarine ship above our natural habitat for months, and the animals are so frightened by the size and the noise of his ship that they've all run away. Can you help us get rid of Gershwin Cousteau once and for all?" "You bet we can," Froggy the Gator said. And then Froggy and Tomato Hedgehog fired up their underwater mechanical submarine robot suits and zipped up toward Gershwin's ship. They gained so much speed with their suits that when they reached the water's surface, they flew 20 feet into the air and then landed with a confident thud on the deck of Gershwin Cousteau's submarine ship. And there he was. They saw him immediately. Gershwin Cousteau, wearing white suspenders, a blue shirt underneath it, and a blue sailor's cap, and a pirate's patch over one eye, steering his submarine ship where the sea animals didn't want him to be. "Halt!" Froggy the Gator said, as he pointed his underwater mechanical submarine robot suit arm at Gershwin Cousteau. "Your days of scaring the ocean animals are over, Gershwin. We've come to put a stop to your submarine ship once and for all." Gershwin Cousteau slowly turned toward Froggy and Tomato Hedgehog. He stared at them with his one eye that wasn't covered up by a pirate's patch. "Well, well, well," said Gershwin Cousteau. "I never thought I'd see you boys here. And it looks like you've got some fancy new suits, too, huh? Well, I can promise you one thing. I'll never stop driving my submarine here. Not until I find what I'm looking for." Froggy and Tomato Hedgehog looked at each other. Then they looked back at Gershwin Cousteau. "What you're looking for," Froggy the Gator said. Wait a minute. What is it that you need?" All of a sudden, Gershwin Cousteau's entire demeanor changed. Demeanor means your outward behavior, so how you stand, your body language, your facial expressions, how you talk, that kind of stuff. All of a sudden, Gershwin Cousteau's entire demeanor changed. "Well, boys," Gershwin Cousteau continued, "the reason I'll never stop driving my submarine here is because I can't stop. I'm trapped here. My submarine may look really cool, but it can't drive without power. And the only thing that can fuel it are the magic barnacles that live right beneath us in the ocean. But I also can't get down there to get them because my submarine doesn't have any fuel, and I don't have an underwater mechanical submarine robot suit like you boys do." "The magic barnacles, you say?" Froggy the Gator responded. Then he looked at Tomato Hedgehog. "You think he means those glowing yellow purple barnacles we saw at the bottom of the ocean?" Gershwin Cousteau interrupted. "Yes, yes, that's exactly what I mean. Can you get me some of those barnacles so I can power my ship? If you do, I promise to leave forever and the animals below can live in peace." And with that, Froggy and Tomato Hedgehog jumped high up into the air off the deck of Gershwin's ship. They did a few cool flips and twists in the air before diving back into the water, and they swam down and retrieved a few bucketfuls of the magic glowing barnacles and then sent Gershwin on his way. Back beneath the surface, Terrence swam up to the boys. "How can I ever thank you?" he said. as marine life slowly returned to the ocean, filling up the space around them. "Well, there's no need to thank us," Froggy the Gator said. "Old Gershwin may seem mean, but he's often just misunderstood. And once you know what he's actually after, what's actually motivating him, he's a lot easier to deal with." The sea animals all around them cheered, and they lifted Froggy and Tomato Hedgehog up in their awesome submarine suits, and they threw an underwater parade in their honor. Froggy and Tomato Hedgehog gave each other a high five, and then they enjoyed the rest of their day at the aquarium. It was a beautiful sunny day at Gator Grove Beach, and Froggy the Gator, Mr. Hummus, and Wormbird were building sandcastles and enjoying the water when they saw a group of surfers out in the breakers, surfing the waves and having a great time. They'd seen surfers before when they were at the beach, but today the surfers caught the boys' attention more than usual. And before they knew it, the boys' imagination started to take off. Froggy looked around the beach, and all of a sudden, there were people everywhere, lining up in droves, gathering around the shore. He looked back toward the dunes at the top of the beach, and he saw a sign that said, "Gator Grove Beach Surf Contest, Grand Prize, the famous Golden Surfboard." "Oh man, fellas, did you know there was a surf contest today?" Froggy asked his friends. "Well, we should enter it, and we should see if we can win the grand prize, the Golden Surfboard." Mr. Hummus and Wormbird seemed interested in the idea, but then Mr. Hummus chimed in. "That would be great, Froggy, but we're just kids. How can we expect to win a contest against experienced surfers?" "I'm glad you asked," Froggy said, "because today we aren't just kids. Today we have our superpowers." And all of a sudden, Froggy turned into Froggy the Fire Match, who controlled fire with his mind. He clapped his hands and his fists turned into fists of fire, and he flew up into the sky doing flips and practicing his abilities. "Oh man, that's right," Mr. Hummus said. "I forgot we were also superheroes today." And Mr. Hummus suddenly turned into the Ice King. He had the power to control ice, if you'll recall, and he could make ice roads and ice bridges shoot out from his feet. He flew all around the beach doing his ice powers, getting the hang of his abilities. Finally, it was Wormbird's turn, and Wormbird showed off his powers. He snapped his fingers and he turned into the famous Dragonfly Man with X-ray vision and super speed. And in the blink of an eye, he disappeared and returned back to the boys with a delicious looking pizza straight from Sicily. The boys had the attention of the crowd now, and the onlookers cheered as the boys flew around and used their cool superpowers. Then the surf contest began. The superheroes did great in the first couple of rounds, their superpowers more than made up for their relative lack of experience. But then, off in the distance, toward the horizon, they noticed something ominous. A huge wave, taller than a building, started forming. It grew so tall that it blocked out the sun and sent a huge shadow down over the surfers and over the crowd. "Oh boy," said Froggy, "I have a bad feeling about this. Do you guys think, could it be? Wavemaster Surf Pirate Gershwin!" And then, in the distance, riding the wave that blocked out the sun on a rocket-powered surfboard, they saw him. It was Wavemaster Surf Pirate Gershwin, and he was speeding toward the crowd of surfers and toward the crowd of innocent bystanders. As he approached, he spoke. Wavemaster Pirate Gershwin said, "I'm here to show you all how a real surfer rides." And with that, Wavemaster Surf Pirate Gershwin started doing crazy turns and cutbacks and catching air as he sped up and down the huge wave. Then, Wavemaster Surf Pirate Gershwin held out his hands and used his Wavemaster powers to harness the ocean and bring even more huge waves crashing down toward the shore, sending the bystanders and the spectators running away from the surf for higher ground. "Oh no," said Froggy, "he's going to ruin the competition. We gotta figure out a way to stop him." So the superhero surfers teamed up. They flew over to where Wavemaster Surf Pirate Gershwin was surfing, and they used their combined powers to try and stop him from controlling the waves and causing a panic. Froggy used his fire match speed to try and send Wavemaster Surf Pirate Gershwin off course, but to no avail, as Wavemaster Surf Pirate Gershwin just sprayed him with seawater and extinguished his fire match abilities. Mr. Hummus was also foiled, as the sun and the seawater proved too warm for his ice powers and melted his ice before it could ever even reach Gershwin. And alas, Wormbird the Dragonfly Man was unable to stop Gershwin either, as his wings got waterlogged with all of the salty seawater from Wavemaster Surf Pirate Gershwin's movements and forced him to the ground, rendering his super speed powers useless. "This is not good, fellas," Froggy said. "I don't know how we're going to get out of this one." But just then, when all hope seemed lost, when it seemed like there was no chance for the boys to stop Wavemaster Surf Pirate Gershwin and for the boys to continue their surf contest in peace, they heard, off in the distance, way out in the ocean, a single horn blaring as if to announce the arrival of something very important. The boys looked toward the sound, and there they saw it. Coming into focus and speeding toward the beach, they saw a chariot. A chariot is like a fancy wagon. It's pulled by a couple of horses, usually. But they saw a chariot, except this chariot had seahorses pulling it instead of regular horses. And it had a beautiful, ornate, pearl-colored carriage. And it had horn blowers riding the seahorses, blowing their horns as fanfare to announce their presence. And there in the carriage, they saw none other than their friend, Terra Pterodactyl, who also had superpowers. "Fear not, everyone," Terra Pterodactyl said, as she sped toward the crowd and toward Wavemaster Surf Pirate Gershwin on her chariot. "I am Terra the Sea Whisperer, and my superpowers are I can speak with the sea animals. I will stop Wavemaster Surf Pirate Gershwin once and for all." And her horn blowers blew their horns, and as they did, Terra waved her pterodactyl arms, and all of a sudden, a pod is what you call a group of whales. A pod of 20 dolphins sped up to Gershwin and swam under him. And using their dolphin speed, they carried him away off into the distance, hundreds of miles away from the contest, which could resume safely once again. The crowd went wild, cheering for Terra the Sea Whisperer. "Great work, Terra," Froggy said. "You showed up just in time. How can we thank you for saving the contest?" Terra just smiled triumphantly. "No need to thank me, guys. Let's just surf and take home that golden surfboard once and for all." Thank you for listening to Froggy the Gator. This is a reminder. If you want to help the show grow, make sure you get your parents' permission and you rate us in your podcast app of choice. Make sure you're following us and consider leaving us a review. We'll see you next time. Outside, in Froggy the Gator's backyard, Froggy and Mr. Hummus were in the middle of something very important. "Vroom, vroom," yelled Froggy, as he pedaled his big wheel around in circles in the backyard. "Watch out! There's a huge monster truck coming through!" Mr. Hummus cheered as Froggy went around and around in circles in the backyard, narrowly avoiding the bushes and shrubs in Daddy the Gator's favorite cherry tree that he'd just planted a few weeks ago. "Next up," Froggy the Gator announced into a pretend microphone, "Mr. Hummus will be riding his huge monster truck, 20 feet tall, with 15-foot wheels, across the dangerous lava pit." Froggy gave his big wheel to Mr. Hummus, and the boys imagined the exciting scene. They imagined a huge stadium filled with thousands of people, all cheering for Mr. Hummus to make his big jump across the lava pit. Mr. Hummus climbed up into his massive imaginary monster truck. The truck was all black with white and green and red stripes going down the sides and lightning bolts on the top. It was as tall as a house, and Mr. Hummus imagined needing a ladder just to get up into the driver's seat. The crowd continued to cheer, and Mr. Hummus revved the engine of the mighty monster truck. The engine roared so loudly that it drowned out the cheer of the crowd, a thundering boom signaling that he was ready to make his jump. "Go ahead, Mr. Hummus," Froggy shouted. And Mr. Hummus mashed the pretend pedal down on the floorboard of his pretend monster truck and started flying toward the imaginary lava pit. He picked up speed, and he jumped, and just like that, everything went into slow motion. As he went airborne, Mr. Hummus looked down on the lava pit below. He could see rock monsters with big, red, fiery eyes reaching up for him, trying to grab him and bring him back down into the lava pit. But luckily, Mr. Hummus had gotten just enough speed before the jump that the rock monsters were out of reach. He laughed as he flew over the angry rock monsters and the bubbling lava and the magma below him, and after what felt like 10 minutes in the air, he landed safely on the other side of the lava pit. "And the crowd goes wild," Froggy shouted. "Great work, Mr. Hummus. What an amazing jump." "It's your turn now, Froggy," Mr. Hummus said. "What are you going to do with the monster truck?" "Well, Mr. Hummus," Froggy said, "it's funny you should ask. I am going to do a big jump too. But this time, I'm not jumping over the lava pit. No, no, no. I am jumping over the Ice Kingdom. I'm going to jump over the Ice Kingdom, and I'm going to jump over the Icicle Towers where the abominable Yeti lives. You see, this Yeti has been trapped in the Ice Kingdom for hundreds of years, and he's mad, and he wants to trap kids in the Ice Kingdom with him. And once I clear the Ice Kingdom, I'll land safely by my dad's cherry tree sapling that he just planted a few weeks ago." "That sounds great, Froggy," Mr. Hummus said. And Froggy climbed into his imaginary huge monster truck. He revved the engine. He imagined the crowd cheering. And he imagined the towering, terrifying Ice Kingdom looming ahead of him. He imagined icy clouds and the shrieks of the abominable Yeti that wanted to trap him. He knew that he had to give this jump everything he had. So Froggy the Gator pressed his foot down hard against the imaginary pedal. And just like that, he was off. He flew up into the air, and he laughed as he easily cleared the Ice Kingdom. "Not today, Yeti," Froggy said. "You're not going to trap me in the Ice Kingdom." But just as Froggy landed back on the ground on the other side of the Ice Kingdom, something happened. All of a sudden, and out of nowhere, back in the real world, Froggy lost control of his big wheel. He skidded into a patch of dirt in the backyard, and he careened into his dad's favorite cherry tree that Daddy the Gator had planted just a few weeks before. "Oh no," Froggy shouted as he lost more control of the car. It sped up and it drove right into the cherry tree, snapping its branches and cracking its tiny sapling trunk right down the middle. "Are you okay, Froggy?" Mr. Hummus asked, as he ran to check on his best friend. "Yeah, I'm okay," Froggy said, "but my dad is gonna be so mad. I ruined this baby cherry tree that he planted the other week. He wanted it to grow up big and beautiful, and I slammed right into it." Just then, Daddy the Gator rushed outside to see what the commotion was. "Oh no, Froggy," he said. "What happened to my cherry tree?" Froggy sat in silence for a moment. He didn't really know what to say. Finally, he decided he only had one option. He had to tell the truth. "I'm sorry, Dad," Froggy said. "Mr. Hummus and I were playing, and I lost control of my toy car, and I ran into the tree. I know you're probably mad, but that's what happened." "Son," Daddy the Gator said, "it's true that I'm a little sad that the cherry tree is damaged. But you know what I'm not sad about? In fact, you know what I'm proud about?" "No, what's that, Dad?" Froggy asked. "I'm proud that you told the truth," Daddy the Gator said. "And in this family, that's what we do." That night, as Froggy the Gator drifted off to sleep in his room, Daddy the Gator peeked his head into the door. This was Froggy's favorite part of the night. "Hey, son, I just wanted to tell you again how grateful I am that you were honest with me about the tree," Daddy the Gator said. "Telling the truth is one of the most important things our family does. It's our job to be honest with people, and as long as we tell the truth, and as long as we're accountable for our actions, we'll be right where we need to be in life." "Thanks, Daddy," Froggy said. "I didn't want to tell the truth, because I was worried that you would be mad. But I knew it was the right thing to do. And I'm glad I told the truth. And next time, I promise, I'll ask for your help when I'm jumping over the abominable Yeti and the Ice Castle Fortress. Because together, there's no way we would lose control of the monster truck." Froggy the Gator jumped out of bed. He couldn't possibly contain his excitement. He got dressed as quickly as he could, he threw on his baseball cap, and he flew down the stairs to the kitchen for breakfast. "Whoa there, son," Daddy the Gator said when he saw Froggy rushing into the kitchen. "I'm guessing somebody's excited for today." "That's right, Dad," Froggy said as he grabbed a few slices of bacon and a bagel. "I've been waiting for this day all year. I can't wait." So what was Froggy the Gator so excited about? What was so special about this particular day? Well, it just so happened that this time of year in Gator Grove, when the leaves are changing colors and the air is getting cooler, something special comes to town. What is that? What comes to Gator Grove that's so special? Well, it's the State Fair, of course. And today, Froggy the Gator was going with his friends, Mr. Hummus, Tomato Hedgehog, and Wormbird, to the State Fair with their dads. Now, if you don't know what a State Fair is, allow me to explain, because it's pretty great. A State Fair is like a huge carnival, where people from all over the state gather once a year. All of the farmers in the state bring their best animals, their livestock, and their crops to show off. There's always tons of trucks and farm equipment to look at. There's even a monster truck pit where you can watch trucks race around a mud track. And that's not even to mention the other great things about state fairs, like the carnival games, the rides, and of course, the food. And what makes a state fair most special is that it only comes around once per year. It isn't always in town. And when it is, Froggy the Gator makes sure to go and see all the great stuff that it has to offer. Daddy the Gator and Froggy the Gator pulled into the parking lot at the state fairgrounds. It was still early, maybe 9 a.m., but the crowd of fairgoers had already started gathering for the day. They quickly found Wormbird, Mr. Hummus, and Tomato Hedgehog with their dads, and once they were all gathered together, they walked into the state fair. Froggy the Gator immediately smelled a cacophony of smells. A cacophony of smells means like a bunch of different interesting smells all at once from all directions. He smelled a cacophony of smells like funnel cakes and fried turkey legs and livestock and maybe even some cow manure. There was no mistaking it. They were now at the fair. "All right, boys," Daddy the Gator said, "the first place we're going to go is to the livestock hall. That's where all the farm animals are. Farmers bring their best and their biggest livestock to the fair, and they get judged by professional judges to see who has the overall greatest animals. Let's go." So the group walked into the livestock hall, and the first animal they saw was a huge pig. It must have been 500 pounds, and it was laying there on its side on a bunch of hay that had been put down on the cement hall floors. The pig was pink, with white hair sticking up all over its body. It had a huge snout, and it was snorting the whole time the boys were looking at it. The pig even had little baby pigs all around it too, getting their milk and running around all over the pen. Then they walked over to the next animal, and what was that? Why, it was a huge, real cow. It was brown with white spots, and it was sitting in a pen chewing on hay and wagging its long cow tail. "Look at the way it chews," Froggy the Gator said. "That's right," said Mr. Hummus's dad, Father Hummus. "It's chewing on its cud, which is basically partly digested food that cows chew up multiple times so they can be sure to get all of the nutrients they need." Then they saw another big cow, a white one with black spots this time, and this cow was actually getting milked by its farmer. And the boys couldn't believe their luck because the farmer asked them if they wanted to try milking the cow, which they did, of course, before moving on to the next animal. Then as they turned a corner in the exhibition hall, they saw one of the biggest, most beautiful turkeys they'd ever seen in their lives. The turkey strutted around with its red gobble and its beautiful brown and white feathers spread out wide. "I bet whatever award they give the turkeys," Froggy said, that's the one that's going to win it. They walked around and saw a bunch of other animals like chickens and ducks and donkeys. They even saw a big ostrich, which was taller than Daddy the Gator because it's the biggest bird in the world. Then they were off to see something that might have been even cooler than the animals. Because as soon as they exited the hall, they heard the loud roar of engines outside. As they turned the corner out of the building, they saw the unmistakable sight of a dirt monster truck track. And as they got closer, they saw bleachers where they would sit down and watch two huge monster trucks driving all around the mud and crashing and skidding and kicking up dirt. Froggy the Gator imagined that the monster trucks were his favorite trucks, the Blue Beast and the Brave Digger, and he imagined seeing them riding in a big arena like he had done a couple of months ago. After the guys watched the trucks for a few minutes, it was time to take a look at some of the cool vehicles on display. They walked around the fairgrounds and they saw a real live fire truck, which they were allowed to touch and even go inside to sit down. Then they saw a big white working ambulance with lights and sirens and everything. And then they also saw all different types of farm equipment. They saw tractors, they saw plows, they even saw a huge baler, which they got to see take a bunch of loose hay and turn it into nice, neat, round bales for the farmer to sell. "Well, fellas," Daddy the Gator said, "what do you think of the fair so far?" The kids all announced almost in unison, which means almost at the same time, "This is great," they said. "This is the best state fair yet." Daddy the Gator and the other dads just laughed. That's great, said Daddy the Gator. That's what I like to hear. Now, it's time for my favorite part of the state fair. My most favorite part of all. Do you know what that is, guys? Daddy the Gator asked. No, Dad, Froggy said. What could possibly be better than this? We've already seen so much great stuff. I know, son, Daddy the Gator said, but this next part isn't something that we see, it's something that we taste. And so Daddy the Gator led the group down a small hill toward the food section. And the guys ordered funnel cakes, and candied apples, and popcorn, and pizza, and deep-fried cheeseburgers, and most importantly of all for Daddy the Gator, they ordered fried turkey legs. After they'd all gotten their food, they all sat around at a picnic table, enjoying the delicious treats, and thinking about all of the great stuff that they had seen that day at the annual Gator Grove State Fair. Hey everybody, this is Harrison. I'm the creator of Froggy the Gator. Thank you all for listening as always. Thank you so much for joining us on Froggy the Gator. If you want to help the show grow, people ask me all the time how they can do that. The best thing you can do is tell your friends about Froggy the Gator and make sure that you're following us on your podcast app of choice and consider leaving us a review. And of course, if you're a kid listening to this, get your parents' permission first. Today was an exciting day in Gator Grove because the Traveling Renaissance Festival was in town. And you guessed it, Froggy the Gator and his friends were there. What's a Renaissance Festival, you ask? Well, it's basically like a fair, but everyone there is dressed up like they're from medieval Europe. There are people dressed up as knights, as nobles, as kings and princesses and princes and queens, and bards and minstrels playing their lutes and their flutes. Plus, there's even mythical creatures like wizards and elves and dragons. It was like stepping back into a time machine, into their favorite knight and dragon story. And as we know, at times like these, the boys' imaginations begin to run wild. As Froggy, Wormbird, and Mr. Hummus walked through the doors of the towering inflatable castle tent that housed the fair, they were immediately transported back into another time completely. They saw horses, they saw knights, and they found themselves in a real medieval countryside. And what's even more exciting is the second they transported back to the medieval village, guess who they saw? Why, it was none other than their old friend, Wizard Earthstone. Greetings, boys, Wizard Earthstone said. I am so glad that you're here. You've arrived just in time. The village of Gator Groveshire is in dire need of your help. Oh wow, hey Wizard Earthstone, Froggy said. Well, we haven't seen you since you sent us on that quest at the library to free you from your book. Well, what's going on and how can we help? Well, said Wizard Earthstone, I'm glad you asked. You see, Gator Groveshire has a problem. Many moons ago, we were first visited by the fearsome Groveshire Dragon. He lives in those mountains off in the distance, and he's been coming to our village and shooting his fire at our houses and generally being a huge nuisance. The bravest knights in our kingdom have tried to fend him off, but to no avail. He keeps coming back to our village, and he keeps shooting out his fire. Oh my, said Froggy, well that does seem to be a big problem. Well, we're happy to help, of course, but we're just kids. If knights couldn't save your village, why do you think we could? That's where I come in, Wizard Earthstone said. And with that, he raised his magic wand and he said the magic words, Abracadabra! And all of a sudden, the boys started transforming. In an instant, they had become tall and gallant. Gallant means like brave or heroic or noble. They had become tall and gallant knights. Froggy the Gator had shiny silver armor and a big red feather sticking out of his silver helmet. Mr. Hummus had black armor with a big blue feather sticking out of his black helmet. And Wormbird had shiny jade armor with a matching green feather sticking out of his helmet. And what's even better? The boys looked down at their waists and saw that they all had shields, and they also had the coolest, shiniest, silver swords that they had ever seen. "Wow," said Froggy, "this is great. We're like real knights now, fellas, and I bet with this armor and with these swords, we can face that dragon and save Gator Groveshire." The Wizard Earthstone raised his wand again and said the magic words again, and suddenly three horses appeared. "It's time to go," Wizard Earthstone said. "Good luck, boys. We are all counting on you." And with that, the boys rode through the countryside toward the mountains. They dashed past peasant houses who were all waving and wishing them good luck as they headed straight toward the dragon's lair in the mountains. As they approached the mountains, they began to hear roars. "That must be him," Froggy said. "That must be the dragon." And they rode their horses up to the foothills, and all around them they saw smoldering trees, recently burned down by the dragon's fiery breath. In fact, the entire mountainside had been burned. "Oh boy," Wormbird said, "this looks dangerous." But they kept riding, and soon they arrived at a huge cave on the side of the mountain. They could clearly hear the dragon roars coming from inside the cave. "This is it, fellas. We're here," Froggy said. The boys dismounted from their horses, they drew their swords, and they walked toward the cave. But before they could enter, they heard a loud roar, followed by the dragon's voice.
"Halt!"
the dragon said.
Who dares disturb my slumber?
"Well, hello, Mr. Dragon," Froggy said. "We are the three gallant friends, Sir Froggy, Sir Hummus, and Sir Wormbird of Groveshire. And we're here to stop you from visiting Gator Groveshire and from shooting them with fire ever again." All of a sudden, they heard a loud roar, and the dragon flew out of the cave at them. He flew high up into the sky, and he had huge wings, maybe 100 feet across, and he was scaly and black with big red eyes and dark green dragon whiskers surrounding his face. He had a tail that must have been longer than a school bus, and as he flew above the boys, he blocked out the sun and sent a dragon-shaped shadow covering their position. He blew a huge blast of fire down at the boys, but they held up their shields and blocked it just in time. Then the dragon landed right in front of them. He let out another huge roar, and as he did, Froggy noticed something strange. When the dragon roared, he winced, as if he was in pain. And when he roared, he only used one side of his mouth. "Wait a minute, guys," Froggy said. "I think I know how to tame this dragon." And then Froggy bravely charged toward the dragon with his sword drawn like a joust. Except he wasn't trying to hurt the dragon. No, no, no. Froggy took his sword straight toward the dragon's jaw, where he was clearly in pain, and like a toothpick, he used his sword to remove a big piece of meat that was lodged between the dragon's back molars. All of a sudden, the dragon calmed down. He breathed a huge, smoky sigh of relief. He even smiled at Froggy as Froggy rode his horse back to his friends a safe distance away. "Finally," said the dragon. "Thank you, son, thank you. That piece of food had been stuck in my teeth for months. It caused my fire breath to explode uncontrollably, and every time I went to the village down the mountain to get help, they just sent more and more of their knights after me. But now I can live in peace, thanks to you, clever gentlemen. Thank you for saving me and for solving the problem in my teeth." Feeling relieved and proud, the boys went back to report their victory to Wizard Earthstone. "Oh my, thank you, boys," Wizard Earthstone said when they told him the news. I suppose that oftentimes our enemies are just misunderstood. And while it's always important to protect ourselves and to protect those we love, we should also attempt to understand those we don't understand. The boys bowed to the wise wizard Earthstone, and they rode their imaginary horses off into the distance, leaving the people of Gator Grove Shire to rest peacefully and happily forever after.